Good morning again, everyone. God's creation, as we know, is beautiful. Absolutely, I love God's creation. We know that that has been an interest of mine for a long time, an interest of all of ours in this room. We love God's creation, taking it in. It's full of the amazing. It's full of the absolute breathtaking. And it's full of the phenomenal. There's things that you will see out in nature that all of us have, whether you hike to it, drive to it, whatever it might be, whether you can take it in, feel it, whatever it is that we see and you say, wow, that is absolutely amazing, phenomenal, just beautiful. Whether it's a beautiful waterfall or just a sunset, wildlife of all sorts, whatever it might be. Something that we've done as a family when out hiking is to see the beauty in the tiny things. This, the looking for the tiny things itself. We love being able to see whether it's a small flower, whether it's an insect, whatever it is, whether we're lifting up rotten wood or a stone or something like that, and we're looking for everything that we can on a very tiny level. One of my favorite flowers of all time is not one that you will ever really probably think about very much is birdsfoot trefoil. And it is something you've probably seen a lot of, but maybe not even realized what it was. And it grows in places that other plants won't. So if you're in a construction zone and they've just wiped out all of the topsoil and they've taken that out and there's just other things don't grow except for some of these hardy weeds and all of that, you also have this yellow plant that starts popping up. And it just doesn't draw a whole bunch of attention until you get close. And when you get close to it, it is orchid-like. It's actually very much related to like the pink lady slippers or lady slippers, if you're familiar with those. And they're just absolutely beautiful. You take it up and the yellow is deep and it's vibrant and it's beautiful. And it's just something you don't pay attention to, but it is this piece of beauty growing up in what you would oftentimes say, this is a disturbed area. It's not a beautiful area at all. But here comes this birdsfoot trefoil, and it's just absolutely gorgeous, especially when you take it up really, really closely. And we love moments like that. We love being able to look at things like that. That guarantees that every time you're in nature, you will not be disappointed, because it's not always about the big stuff. It's not always about the bears. Yeah, we love seeing the bears. But the bears and the waterfalls and all of those things, it's not only about that. It's about every aspect of God's creation. You will see the small things God created and constantly be reminded of his design and the joy of the beauty that he puts there. And he puts that to be taken in and to enjoy. And I love that. It reminds us of that all the time, of these small little things or the colorful creation under the water that for many, many, many years people, they never snorkeled. They didn't do that. So most people never saw it. God did. God created it. And it was there to be seen. And we're just now able to see a lot of those things. But God saw it, he created, and he loves beauty. There are many things that must be present for that beauty of nature to exist. From plants, fungi, which is a very interesting study, something to get into for wildlife. And all wildlife, anything living. Just being able to get into that and be able to see the different variations of color. But God designed a phenomena. Light. To not only be essential for life, which it is essential for life to exist, light had to be there. Not only for the essential for life, but to see the beauty of God's creation, to be able to take it in. Light is an amazing thing. Let's go to Genesis 1. Genesis 1. Light is an incredible thing. That gives us so much. Genesis 1, verse 1, says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." We probably all have this memorized. You probably don't even need to turn to it. We've been here many times. Verse 2, "The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, 'Let there be light,' and there was light. And God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day." God said, "Let there be light." This was the bringing forth of light. that it could start a process, that it could start doing what he created it to do. That it could start, and that is the start of what we know. In Life, Hope, and Truth, it mentions this on verse 3. It says, God began the recreation week by making alterations that allowed light to diffuse into the earth's atmosphere. This was probably done by clearing and cleaning the atmosphere of dense, thick clouds of gas that had become so thick that light was completely blocked from reaching the surface of the earth. I don't want to concentrate on the recreation account. But that light was brought forth. It was allowed to penetrate to the earth. It was there for life to begin. Every process needed that for it to begin. Light is a tool of God's for incredible things that we get to partake in every single day. We don't even think about it most of the time. Here are a few things from a basic search of what light does. Now, a lot of these are not going to be surprising. They're things that you've heard multiple times. Some of them are going to be things that you heard in elementary school. But that in itself is just interesting of what light does. So we got this from reference.com. It says, light is the triggering force behind many chemical, biological, and physiological changes in life forms on Earth. Just for things to happen and occur the way that it does, God created an ability for things to be able to change and grow and develop. It continues, said it provides much needed energy and also forms the foundation that aids in visibility. Yeah, to be able to take it in, we say, light for us to be able to see. But God created that ability to be able to see his creation. Now, all of these are going to be, they're simplified, obviously. There's so much more to it. Number two that I saw was from toplist.com. It says speed. The speed of light in a vacuum is a little over 186 miles per second. And you think about the speed of that. When it is there, it's there. Very, very quickly. It's a little over that. And again, that's in a vacuum. But I looked up why the speed of light was even important. Okay, so that's the speed of light. Then what? Why is it important? Well, science is able to determine distance, time, and speed over signals and material particles. What that means is we can tell how far certain stars are, the size of planets, the size of the sun, all of the different things. They're able to tell things by the speed of light. So it becomes very important. Number three, from ihni.com, colors are the reflection of light. Again, these are all simplified. But it says, have you ever wondered why green apples are green? The light that we see as humans is made up of the spectrum of electromagnetic waves, which all have different frequencies. The spectrum forms all the colors of the rainbow. As light travels, it falls on the surface of things, which two things can happen. The light can be absorbed or it can bounce off. Things appear colored because they absorb some part of the spectrum and not others. The part that is not absorbed bounces off the surface of the item and into our eyes, and we see colors. So an apple is green because only the green part of the spectrum reflects off of it, while the rest is absorbed. Obviously, again, simplified, but it's a way to be able to put that. Think about that from a design perspective. God created a way by light to see the amazing colors of his creation, for them tiny, tiny little things to massive things, to things underwater, to whatever it is. But he gave us that ability to be able to take it in and how that works. Actually, humans can't see much of the colors that do exist. We actually have very limited vision when it comes to light. Some organisms have much better vision than we do. Some have worse. But we actually don't see very, very much of that spectrum. Number four, I got this from Discover Magazine. Says, I just found this interesting. It said, light has no mass, but it does have momentum. Has no mass, but it does have momentum. So it does have speed, but it doesn't fill a room like something that does have mass. It fills it in a very different way. Just meaning it is unique. It is unique in and of itself. And the fifth one, just five, Discover Magazine also said, visible light makes up less than 1/10 billionth of the electromagnetic spectrum, which stretches from radio waves to gamma rays. Just all of that part of the creation that God puts there. And it's just, to me, that's fascinating. Here's a little bit of a side fact. Actually, this has nothing to do with the sermon. It just sounded pretty neat. From it, it says, a light jiffy is very quick. You know, I'll be there in a jiffy. I've never even thought about it. I've never even considered what does that mean. You know, you have these sayings and you say, okay, what is that even talking about? Well, that's one of them. I've never even thought about it. Said a jiffy is a unit of measurement which dictates how long it takes for light to travel up to a centimeter. Therefore, saying you'll be there in a jiffy literally means you'll be there right away, which I just thought that was interesting. But those are just a few of many interesting things about light and how it pertains to us, why it's important to us. Actually, I found so many articles and so many lists. I mean, there is a lot there, and some of them argue with each other, so I didn't put any of that stuff in there because people say this has never been found, and other people said no, most certainly has been found, and there's kind of this thing, and I don't know either way, so I didn't add any of that stuff in there. But the importance of life for our existence. We know and understand light is important just from our lives, what we do. But the creator of light knows intimately the value of light, why he created it in the way that he did. We're working up to a point. Let's go to John 1. These often, you could almost not turn here and know exactly what it says because they are often put together. John 1. In verse 1, John 1 and verse 1, John 1 and verse 1 says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and darkness did not comprehend it." I like that last part. There's a lot happening here, but God spoke, and the one who became Jesus Christ, the Word created, brought about that creation. Light was an invaluable part of their creation of how life would work, how life would come about, how life would function, develop, grow, and grow through time. Jesus Christ became the light of man. He shined outward to produce the way to live. Darkness didn't comprehend it. I love that. Darkness didn't comprehend it. Here's an interesting fact. Darkness also has a speed. Darkness travels at the speed of light. That's how fast darkness is. It says more accurately, science shows darkness does not exist by itself as a unique physical entity, but is simply absent of light. So when the light comes on, it is at over 186 miles per second. And the darkness disappears at that exact same speed. Light goes off, and darkness reappears at the exact same speed. So darkness has a speed. Kind of gives you this idea of the darkness in the world and Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ physically came into the world, and he exposed the evil by his light, his beautiful light, his life. There's different depictions of Jesus, especially in Revelation, where he is bright. There is no darkness in him. He is pure. He is beautiful. His word shows and teaches us how to shine outward as well. And he expects that of us. He expects us to do what he did. He knows it's not going to be exact. He was perfect and pure. We are not. But he expects us to shine. Let's go to Matthew 5. It is another. These first few scriptures are ones we know quite well. They go together, but Matthew 5, starting in verse 14. Matthew 5, verse 14 says that you are the light of the world. The followers of Christ are to take the light he shined and carry it forward. There's a responsibility that happens. Could very much resemble someone carrying a lit torch and then lighting other torches. And he says, now you are the light of the world. He's telling us, you are the light of the world. This is how you are to be. This is how you are to shine in the world that we live in, a very dark world. Verse 14, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Light is the value of sight. It exposes everything it touches. It brings it about. You are able to see it. What then would the value of light be if it was hidden, if it was put away, if it was something you put under a basket, whatever it might be? I'd have heard different examples over the years, some that I didn't agree with, some that I did. But overall, it's talking about hiding the light that is there that is supposed to be shining outward, of which Christ said, "You are the light of the world." We aren't to hide it. We aren't to hide it at all. Light, in this case, is very intimate. He's talking about a city on a hill. He's talking about a lamp. It is used to shine forth and is not to be hidden. It isn't something to knock down doors and shine your light in someone else's house. It's not to be there and you're making your light shine and forcing it on people. It's not what it's talking about at all. Verse 16 says, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Let your light so shine. Don't hide it. Just like God said, "Let there be light," which was a tool he used for life, life to come about. Jesus Christ has given us light as a tool for eternal life. And it is to shine. It is how our life, our eternal life, will happen and how we grow and develop. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 4. 2 Corinthians 4. Second Corinthians 4, verse 6 says, "For it is the God who commanded light to shine out of darkness, who has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." The same power that commanded light to shine at creation is the same power to make awesome transformations in our lives, spiritually, powerful, for us to change, grow. This isn't a one-time thing. This transformation can, should, will happen throughout our lives, that we continue to develop and grow. With that in mind, let's go ahead and head over to Ephesians 4. We were recently here building into what we're going to be talking about. Ephesians 4 and verse 20. We're building on the same principle that we were talking about before. Ephesians 4, verse 20 says, "But you have not so learned Christ," or better put, "you, however, did not come to know Christ this way," or "you've learned Christ in a different way." Again, that's Ephesians 4:20. You know him differently. You were never taught him in a different way. Verse 21, "If indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus." As we brought out before, his life was and is the path to walk. Through his word and his life, we have been taught to walk worthy of the calling and to be recreated as well. From who we were before, to be recreated. Verse 22, "that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness." Again, the recreation, the new man which was created according to God. And again, as we brought up before, the word renewed is in the present tense, meaning you are constantly being renewed. We have to be renewed. It is up to date. It is something we do in the present. We are renewing. And this connects back to 2 Corinthians 4:6 that we just read a moment ago, that this isn't a one-time thing. This isn't something that just happens every once in a while. This transformation can and will happen throughout our lives. We will be renewed again and again and again. That's what growth is. And that's what we're wanting within the church. Renewed in righteousness and holiness. Transformation. This transformation is built on becoming the new man. All right, so that leads into part two of a three-part series of the Walk-In series. This is part two, Walk in Light. Part one was walk in love, what we looked at. This was looking at Ephesians 4, verse 25 through Ephesians 5, verse 7, of how to walk in love. There were two things brought out that this verse or these verses showed us. One what love looks like, what actual love looks like, and two, what love doesn't look like, things that need to be void from how we live, but the love that needs to be there as well. Both are equal in value of what to do and what not to do. It shows us that love that we are to have towards others and the love that we are to have towards ourselves. And that's very important, that we are to build in ourselves that love and empty from ourselves the corruption that is there. But not only empty of ourselves the corruption that is there, but not to even be partakers with them. Not to be partakers with it at all. Let's go to Ephesians 5, verse 6. Pick it up there. Ephesians 5, verse 6 says, "Let no one deceive you with empty words. For because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience." It says, "Let no one deceive you." And these are strong things. Deception isn't, again, only for who is the Christ, who isn't the Christ. Not only for doctrinal deceptions. Deception can be anything to persuade you to walk contrary to the way of God, his way of life, contrary to love of what we saw. Arguments for things that we know are wrong, often built around the word love, and we see that around us. We brought it out last time. All the things that they put the word love on, and it is a corruption of God's way of life. It is wrong. It isn't what is in Scripture. It isn't a part of God. To believe these arguments is to be deceived by empty words. These arguments, or here today, are things empty of love, or we hear today are things that are empty of love. Then we have verse 7. Verse 7 actually starts our next section of walk in light. I know in some of our Bibles it's put into walk in love, but it actually starts our section of walk in light. It's good to keep in mind that walk in love is talking about the love of God. When talking about walk in light, it's talking about the light of God. It is God's attributes that we are to live within and to mimic. Verse 7, "Therefore do not be partakers with them." That first word, therefore, as has been taught, brought out at different times, the word therefore is referring to what was previously spoken, built upon everything that we've already talked about, talking about love, built on that. You're going to take the new man that is being renewed in love, God's love, and we're going to take it further. He says, we are going to take this further. So you're building the love of God within you. You're emptying yourself of the corruption, building that love of God. Now we're going to build upon that. Jameson Fawcett Brown says this about this verse, says, "Here, fellowship with the wicked workers is forbidden with their wicked works." And Barnes says, "Since these things displeased God and exposed to his wrath, avoid them." Do not be partakers with them. Do not live around it. Don't take it. Don't allow it into your own lives. In other words, avoid anything that will make you opposite of love. And verse 8 builds on this. It says, "For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light." The first thing he mentions is that you were darkness. Not that you were walking in darkness. Not that I was walking in darkness. You were darkness. Their past lives, who he's talking to, our past lives prior to being called, produced darkness. They were walking according to their own lusts. What came from them was, what was produced from them was darkness. But now, linking back to chapter 4, they put on Christ. There has been a change. They were called to God's truth. They were called to the church. They were Gentiles. This church was Gentiles, and they were called to the truth. They were given his Spirit, and a change had already been performed. They were transformed. But now you are light in the Lord. It's a responsibility. What was to be produced from their lives, the love that was previously explained, the love of God, was now to give light. You're building upon it. You're shining forward. You're taking that love and you're projecting it. It's going outward. It was to project outward. But that builds on, he builds on that one more. He says, "You were once darkness, now you are light. Go forward and let that shine, that light shine before men." Your example, what we read earlier. Verse 9, "For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. Some translations use a different word for spirit. You may see word light depending on the translation instead of spirit. It actually is a different word altogether that they feel that is being used here. But when you get into the study of it, either light or spirit, it doesn't matter. It produces the same thing, whether light or spirit. We'll be right back. Let's go to John 12. Let's head over to John 12. We will be back to Ephesians 5. John 12, verse 35. John 12, verse 35 says, "Then Jesus said to them, 'A little while longer, the light is with you. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness overtake you. He who walks in darkness does not know where he is going. While you have the light, which is Jesus Christ, believe in the light, that you may become sons of light.' These things Jesus spoke and departed and was hidden from them." Jesus Christ is simply the light. Whether it says spirit back in Ephesians or light, it is from the same, it produces the same. It's from his spirit, it's from him. Let's go on to Romans 13. Romans 13, verse 11. Romans 13, verse 11 says, "And do this, knowing the time that now is high time to awake out of sleep. For now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness and let us," I love this, "put on the armor of light." The works of God's Spirit, putting on the armor of light, is putting on Christ. It's talking about the same theme, the same discussions, the same ideas, putting on light, putting on the Spirit, putting on Christ, all the same things. Verse 13, "Let us walk properly." And Paul loves this idea of walking, that mode of transportation, of what we're talking, the three-part series, the walk-in series. He talks a lot about it, so does Jesus. "As in the day, not in revelry or drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife and envy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lust." Provision meaning act of providing, not to provide for the flesh. Don't allow things in our lives that will corrupt you, that will take from you, that will make you shine less. That we don't allow these things in. Let's go ahead and go to Ephesians 5:9 again. Ephesians 5:9. We're building a picture before we get into the points of this message, of what he's talking about, why we are heading the direction we are, why the light is important. Ephesians 5:9 says again, "For the fruit of the Spirit is all goodness, righteousness, and truth. The light to shine in us is to be of all goodness, righteousness, and truth." That is quite the light in a world that is often very, very void of that. It'll be seen. Looking at that, there are 4 points in the rest of this section, 4 points on how to shine that he brings out. He told us how to love, how not to love, and now he's going to show us how to shine. What we are to do in a very dark world as Jesus Christ shined as a light in a very dark world. Let's do verse 8 again. We'll read down to verse 10. It says, "For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light." You have been changed. You have a responsibility. You have been given light to then project light. "For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. Finding out what is acceptable to the Lord." Verse 10 is where we get point number one. Point number one is proving what is pleasing to God. Proving what is pleasing to God. The value of light. In verse 10, it says finding out, which I think it's more fitting if you have the King James Version in your lap right now. If you're looking at that, has proving. I think that is more fitting. Not that finding out is a bad translation, but proving or finding out are action words, things that we are to do. We are to be actively using God's Spirit, the light within us, to prove what is that good and acceptable way. That light is a tool for us to use. It's not only projecting outward, it is projecting inward. And that is mostly what we're going to be talking about, because that's mostly what Paul is talking about, that light shining inward that we have. Let's go ahead, reference this over to Romans 12. We will be back, Romans 12. Romans 12, verse 1. Romans 12, verse 1 says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, what is your reasonable service? And do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Paul, again, was saying much of the same thing. The active, growing, renewing transformation is how we learn the perfect will of God. It's how we learn what is that good and acceptable way to God. I like how it says here, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Transformation happens by the act of renewing of your mind, something that is continuing, something that happens every single day. We shouldn't allow ourselves a break from growth. Sometimes it might be easy just to turn it off sometimes. Sometimes it's just too hard. I'm just so tired. No, we don't get the opportunity to turn it off. We don't get a break. He's saying this renewing, the renewing that happens, transforms so that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. That process is how we know what the will of God is. Oftentimes we say, I don't know what the will of God is. Well, this is part of the process of how we find out that light within us, being able to see that. There's a work to be done. Rightfully so, we talk about self-examining prior to Passover. That is a huge subject. Every year, right before Passover, we have sermons and sermonettes and conversations about self-examining. And it's right to do that. It's proper to do that. We're asked to do that. But actually, self-examining is a year-round process, and that is exactly what Paul is talking about here, the year-round process. Let's go back to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5. Verse 10 again, saying, finding out what is acceptable. I like proving what is acceptable to the Lord. The word acceptable loses emphasis. When you're reading it that way, with how we use it today, it loses emphasis of what is being said here. A simple meaning of acceptable is adequate to supply a need, requirement, or standard. You know, we've stayed in hotels that were acceptable. They weren't great, they weren't wonderful, they weren't spectacular, they were just adequate. It was just acceptable, but not the greatest. This word has more of the meaning of pleasing. It's stronger than acceptable. You know, whatever's acceptable to God, God says, okay, that's adequate. No, that's not what this is talking about. It's what is pleasing. Prove what is pleasing to the Lord, that our lives, our steps we take, the light we shine, how we live is pleasing to God, if we do it correctly. This is letting your light shine in your own life to prove what is of the goodness, righteousness, and truth. The good works that glorify your Father in heaven. It's going back to Matthew 5, 16. We'll read that again a little bit later. But the light we have in us is what will show us the works that need to grow, but also the works that need to be gotten rid of. That light will shine in a very dark place. If we have places, spiritually speaking, of darkness, none of us are perfect. God's spirit, God's way of life will shine, and we are able to see the things that we need to get rid of, that we can grow, that we can transform, that we can renew, that we can become more like Jesus Christ. That light becomes more and more of an important part of our life. Just the topic itself of being able to reveal things in our lives that shouldn't be there. Verse 11, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them is where we get point two. Point two, keep your light bright. Point two is keep your light bright. This section here, we're talking about and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. This isn't only talking about the fellowship with the darkness of this world, the bad that's out in the world, whether it's bad influences, bad people, whatever it might be, which I think we could argue fits here as well. I would not remove that from here. I think that fits. But it is more tuned into the darkness that we must shed in our lives, inward, what is there that shouldn't be there. To entertain the darkness or the lusts, Paul was saying the same thing which we read earlier in Romans 13:14 when he said, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lust. He was saying the exact same thing. We are not to entertain the lusts, which is very much of self-interest and self-indulgence. That is why sin is so hard, because oftentimes sin is something that we want, self-interest. I mean, you just take something such as porn, and people have this addiction, and it is hard for these people to break away from it. And if they're surrounding themselves with it, they're not going to. They're fellowshipping with it, is what this is talking about. Allowing in the life, you're not ever going to break that cycle. And he's saying, don't even fellowship with it. Don't entertain it. Don't put it into your lives. Don't allow it in. Just get rid of it completely. Many addictions are the same way. And there are many, many addictions. And he's saying, don't fellowship with it. Don't entertain it. Don't allow it. Don't. If you're going to break something, get rid of it completely. Cold turkey, have it gone. Don't entertain it. Again, we're not to have fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, the things opposite of the fruit of the Spirit. We are not to fellowship with darkness, which can do what? Anytime we fellowship with darkness, anytime we fellowship with something out there that we shouldn't, something we allow in, what does it do to our light? It dims it. It makes it less. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians 5. 1 Thessalonians 5. First Thessalonians 5, verse 4 says, but you, brethren, are not in darkness. Again, you are not part of that world anymore. You have changed. There's something different. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. You are all sons of light, children of light. It's in the masculine form, but I feel like I need two different times to bring it out. It is children, children of light, men and women of light, and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Now, this very much pertains to being watchful for the return of Jesus Christ, the end time events. But being watchful is multifaceted. Everywhere you read it, there's several parts to it. It does pertain to being watchful of the times, as you don't want this day should overtake you as a thief. You don't want that at all. But it also pertains, and I would say even more so, of being watchful of ourselves. What good would it be if you knew when Christ was going to return, but you are living a life of darkness? What good would it be to know that? That is why he says, you are sons of light. Don't let it overtake you as a thief. Live the life now. Don't let it overtake you. Verse 6, therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk are drunk at night. This is letting your light dim. When you're out there and you're letting those things and it's dimming your light even more and more, if you stay there long enough, that light will go out. That is the problem of this world. Things that are enticing, things that look good, arguments that are put a certain way and it makes you question. Oh, wow, okay, maybe they're right. Whatever it might be, these arguments that are out there. Here, those who sleep, is talking about, are people not doing anything spiritually. They're sleeping. They're sleeping. They're not doing anything spiritually. Those who are drunk are those who are actively doing evil. People that are actively doing evil. Verse 8. But let us who are of the day be sober. We're to be different. Putting on the breastplate of faith and love and a helmet of the hope of salvation. Again, to fight against this, God has not left us alone. He's given us the armor of God, which was called the armor of light back in Romans 13:12. It is our armor to fight against the darkness. Darkness can't what? It can't comprehend the light. That is our armor. Let's go back to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, verse 11 again, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. We are to keep our light bright, to be able to expose the wrong in our lives. Every single one of us has them. If we're looking at our lives, as I am to look at my life, we will see these things that need to be gotten rid of, to expose them, to be able to repent and get rid of them. God's light in us is such a beautiful gift in many ways. It's a wonderful gift. This is just one powerful way. God's Spirit will show you and me the wrong in our lives to be able to remove them so that our lights can brighten even more. I've done a lot in my life to dim my light. It's not something we want to have in our life. We want to be bright. Here's an interesting thing that Mr. David Johnson brought out. That if you have two cans of paint, one black, one white, and you mix them, what do you get? You get two cans of gray paint. You don't get purity of any of you, you get two cans of gray paint. He then says, but that's not what happens with darkness and light. Where darkness exists, when the light comes on, darkness is gone. It doesn't matter how dark the darkness is. When the light comes on, the darkness goes away, and that's the way our lives must be. That when the light comes on, the darkness is gone. It's something that we can reveal within us and be able to get rid of when that light comes on. John 1, verse 5, we read earlier, says, and the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it, is saying the exact same thing. That light will expose what was hidden in the darkness. I love that for my life. I need that. We all need that for our lives, to be able to reveal what shouldn't be there. What we do every Passover. Verse 12 says, for it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. Paul is saying even the works of darkness done in secret are shameful. They're even harmful to speak about. We gave a few examples earlier of some of that harm within that. That isn't something that we should want in our minds. There are certain things that it's difficult. For different pastors, we've talked about it, and there's just certain things that might be helpful to be able to understand a problem we're working with, or I've heard different pastors say this, to be able to work and help somebody, but it's so hard to study it because you don't want that into your mind to be able to help somebody. And so you have this battle going on, and there are certain things you just don't want in your mind. In order for our lights to shine, the darkness must not be entertained. It shouldn't be something that we should entertain in ourselves either. Also, something quite powerful, there is no secret. Maybe a secret from each other, but there is no secret from God. I was going back, I was just thinking last night, you know, just the idea of Elisha and the Syrian army. And the king is upset. Who is for Israel that's on our side? Basically, who of you is a spy? And they say, no, it's not that. God tells Elisha what you say in your bedroom. There is, or in the room, in an inner room, a secret room. There is no secret from God. Might be a secret from one another, but not from God. Point three, our light is to shine. Our light is to shine. We don't get to turn off our lights from time to time. What we do in secret must still be of God's Spirit. Doesn't matter if anybody is around or not. Putting on Christ and shining his light is an always thing. It doesn't get a pause. It doesn't get turned off. It doesn't get a break. It is something that is shining always. Let's go back to the scripture I said we would return to, Matthew 5. Matthew 5, verse 14, reading that again. Again, we don't get to turn this off. Matthew 5, verse 14 says, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. The light of Jesus Christ shining through us is something that will stand out. There's no way to hide that. No way to pause that. It is the action of our lives. It's not the preaching on the corner, but the sermon we live. That loud sermon where words may never be spoken. It's the sermon we live. Living God's way of life isn't only something that we shouldn't hide. If we live it, we can't hide it. It's not something that we can hide, but most certainly is not. It's something that we do not want to hide. Verse 15, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. The light we have also gives light to our families. To our families, those around us. It is not to be hidden. You hide the light, and what happens? The speed of darkness happens. You hide the light, darkness is there. Well, how do you battle darkness? Well, verse 16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Let it shine. Don't hide it. I would say encourage it. Where does this take place? This takes place anywhere that you are. Doesn't matter where you are. As a husband and wife, as a father or mother, as a brother or sister, it happens at work. It happens at church, when you're at the store, when you're driving, when you're with friends, with co-workers. It doesn't matter. In the inner rooms, it doesn't matter. This light has to shine at all times. You know, this could sound like I'm pointing, but I'm pointing. I might as well have a mirror up here and pointing at myself. My light has to shine at all times, and it doesn't. We have to build that in our lives, that it does shine at all times. Now, we've probably heard the stories of, or something similar out there, doesn't just pertaining to our church, just in general. You read the news at any time, or read stories, or whatever it might be, you've heard something very similar of a man at church or work or wherever it might be who appears to be a loving father, a loving husband, but is completely different when he's at home. That story's played out many, many times. Or a person, depending on what friends they are around, act accordingly. Whatever friends they are around, when with certain friends they are good, but then surprisingly you look on social media and when they are with other friends you get to see a whole different kind of side and you say, wait, that doesn't match. That's not the same person. They act accordingly. Or when at work a whole different side comes out, you can get caught up in the environment rather than letting your light shine, rather than letting that happen. Our light is to shine always. Let's go to John 3. All of this is easy, I believe, to understand, hard to do. That it's always there. The powerful thing was Jesus Christ was 100% of the time always there. And he says, you are the light of the world. You are to carry my light. We are to strive to do the same thing. John 3. Verse 19, John 3, verse 19 says, and this is the condemnation, that the light has come into the world and the men loved darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. We're standing in that time now. I would argue that time has never gone away. That time has always been here, but we are standing there now. For everyone practicing evil hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. The world doesn't want their deeds exposed. This world hates Christianity. This world hates God's way of life because they don't want their ways to be exposed or be told that they're doing something wrong. They want to live the life that they want to live. In verse 21, but he who does the truth comes to the light, that his deeds may be clearly seen. There's nothing they have to hide, that their deeds may be clearly there. May be clearly seen that they have been done in God. The word comes, Robertson's word picture says that it means drawn by the light. You're drawn by the light. Every time you practice truth, you want more of it. Barnes says, loves the truth and seeks more and more of it, becomes something we want shining in us so badly, more and more of it. Every time you overcome a sin, every time you overcome a weakness, an insecurity, a problem, a fault, a weakness, every time you overcome it, it feels pretty amazing. And you want more of it. You're drawn more to that light. You want that light to shine brighter in you and say, show me more. Show me more that's in me that looks like the world so I can get rid of it. Help me to do that. There's a direct correlation between acting on truth and the lights that shine in us. Let's go to Ephesians 5 again. Go back to Ephesians 5, verse 13. Ephesians 5, verse 13 says, "But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light. For whatever makes manifest is light. You either have light or you have darkness. Christ's light that shines will shine on the weaknesses that are out there. You only have the two. That is it. But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light. For whatever makes manifest is light." If something's being revealed in us, we know what is revealing it so that we can become more like Jesus Christ. We can walk, we can think, we can talk, and become more like him. Our light resembles his light. In verse 14, "Therefore," he says, "awake, you who sleep. Arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light." Point number four. Point four, your purpose is to shine. Your purpose is to shine. Paul is quoting something, but it's not exactly sure what. You can see in your margin, you can read in different commentaries, they try to do different connections. A lot of them say it's not sure, it might be this, it might be that. There's no direct context here. Some feel that it is connected to a hymn. At that time, it might have been a hymn, whatever it might be. There's a Isaiah 60 that they try to connect it to. It's not a great fit. I'm not saying that it couldn't fit, but it's not a great fit. It doesn't flow perfectly. But I believe there is different things that we can get from this, that we can actually see from what Paul was referring to, whether it was a quote from the Old Testament or not, we can gather what he is talking about. One thing is, there are times in our lives where we can fit what he is saying. Awake, you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. There are different times in our lives that we could fit that. From conversion, the time that we went through conversion, to a time that we fall, to the time that someone has walked away for a long time and came back to the truth, and anything in between, all of those things can fit within what Paul is talking about here. So awake, you who sleep. As we brought out before from 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 7, could refer to those who have fallen asleep spiritually. Those who are sleeping. They're not awake. They're not actively working of God's Spirit. That light is not shining. They have let themselves go to sleep. Arise from the dead. As Barnes states, the state of a sinner is often compared to death. And these people have died, not physically, but as a sinner. Hold your finger here. Let's just go back a chapter or two to Ephesians 2. It's fitting because it is thematic, as he is keeping the same theme here. Ephesians 2, verse 1 says, "And you he made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins." Dead in trespasses and sins. Dead and sins. We can go back to Ephesians 5, verse 14. "So awake, you who sleep, arise from the dead." And it says, "And Christ will give you light." Those who wake up spiritually and those who arise from the dead, those who are dead to trespasses and sins, Jesus will give his light. John 8, verse 12. I'll just read it. John 8, verse 12 says, "Then Jesus spoke to them again, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life." That light is life. In other words, he's saying Christ will give you life. He will revive you from your sleep. He will revive you from death. There are times in our lives where we may fall asleep, even go so far as to die to sins. But that doesn't have to be the end. See, I think this is a very comforting verse. I think there's a whole thing here. This can be a great message that many who have fallen asleep and those who have died to sins, again, not physically, but have died to sin, so to speak, I think this is saying Christ is not done with. He hasn't said, okay, we're done with you. We're done with it at all together. Not at all. I don't think that's what it's saying. For us, many of us in the past were asleep. I could put myself within that. I have no problem doing that. I don't ever want to be there again, but I was asleep. did die to sins, but we answered that calling and Jesus Christ gave us his beautiful, wonderful light. Think about that. Why would he do that unless the purpose was for us to shine? Okay, here's the light, carry it on and shine. That is your purpose. That is my purpose. That is an incredible thing, a responsibility given to each of us on our shoulders. And Christ lit our light. Christ gave us light and said, go forward, shine. Our purpose is not to hide that light, but to shine. Something interesting to put out there is light is silent. Light is silent. You don't need a voice to shine to give the light of Jesus Christ. But light is most certainly to be seen. It is something to be seen out of our lives. Can light have a voice? Absolutely. Can words that we say be a light? Yes. But my point being, light is always to be seen. Let's bring this to a close. God's instruction to his people down to us today is to walk in his way of life. It is a lifelong journey that we have to take. Once we put on Christ, our walk began. It was a starting. There was a start line, and we began, and we're not allowed to stop. We don't want to stop. God expected us to build his love, which we saw in part one of this sermon series. On that and with that, we project his light. It was a tool given to us, put in us, that we develop inside of us so that we can project that light. We don't want to hide it. We want to shine. So again, this was part two, walk in light. We saw that once we build the love of God, we must shine. Well, how do we shine? One, by proving what is pleasing to God. Proving that within our lives. The light shines in us to see what shouldn't be there, that we can remove it. We want it to be pleasing to God. We want our steps, our life, our words, our thoughts. There's no secrets. Our thoughts to be pleasing to God, what we allow in. Two, by keeping your light bright, we must keep the oil in our lamps and not let anything dim or put out our light. It has to be something that is constant. Just thought of something. What did they do in the temple? Somebody had to put the oil in the lamp so it was continuously burning always. Well, that is us. We are to continually be burning always. The light must always be bright. Three, by letting our light shine always, we don't get to turn it off from time to time. Our light is to stay lit always, no matter if it's in our home, at work, with our children, whatever it might be, the group of people that we're around. It doesn't get turned off. It might be uncomfortable. But oftentimes, Christ's life looked like something that would be uncomfortable, and he never stopped burning brightly. He never stopped. He continued. Number four is by knowing it is our purpose to shine. That's why we do what we do. For others to see the light of Jesus Christ so that they can glorify your Father in heaven. That is a magnificent responsibility put on our shoulders. That we shine so that God is glorified. That's a tremendous work. That's a phenomenal work. We are to be those who walk in light, the light of God. In a world that is getting darker, we are to let our lights shine brighter.